Kevin, what are you doing in town so early, and why do you have a...
What you say, that you only meant well, well, of course you did. What you say, that it's all for the best, of course it is.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for episode number 84 of Video Games Hot Dog. Sorry it's been so long since the last time we shoved an episode of Video Games Hot Dog up your ears, ass.
And also but, 84, you mean 85.
Kevin has some explaining to do. What? Am I what?
Yeah, 84 was Video Games Taco.
That hasn't been published yet because you have not given me the audio.
No.
86. There's another video game. There is a Video Games Taco that hasn't been published because
of your...
And that
one's going to be 86.
Shit. So this is 87?
No, this is 85.
Kevin, why didn't you write this on some sort of document that you emailed me before the show?
I don't know. I should have been doing my job.
Kevin, explain to the people what the fuck's been wrong with your house for the last 6 months.
So on Tuesday of last week, I woke up and tried
to... This story's boring. I'm going to get drunk.
Yes. I woke up and tried to connect to the internet, and by that I mean I tried to play some letterpress as I normally do in the morning, and was having a hard time doing so, and I was like, what the fuck? And so I like screwed around with it for like 15 minutes in bed, and I was like, whatever. I went into the office and looked at my like AT&T U-verse box that is my DSL and router and everything all in one thing, and it had a big flashing red light where the broadband light normally is green and steady, and I was like, oh god damn it. And so I tried, you know, restarting it and messing with it a little bit, and I was like, this is clearly some problem with the network. And so I called AT&T and I was like, you need to come, but somebody come fix our internet. And so I had to wait home all day for a technician to show up finally at like 5:30 p.m. and he like looks at it for 5 minutes and is like, yeah, this is a more serious problem. It's not in the modem or your house. It's somewhere like further down the line. And then I did not hear from AT&T again for 5 days. Yeah. It wasn't quite that bad. I mean, I called them back the next day and was like, so what's going on? They're like, oh, we're sending a technician out to look at the problem. You know, should be back soon. And then I called again the next day and I was like, what is going on? It's been like over 2 days now without internet access. I work from home. This is like having a serious impact. And they're like, okay, we're sending another tech out. Just stay home and, you know, they'll be there and that kind of thing. And
just stay home. Stay home. Don't go to a grocery store or a bar.
Don't leave the house. Don't go somewhere where you can find some like Wi-Fi at a cafe or whatever, because you need to stay home for this hypothetical Griffin Pegasus unicorn tech to come fix your magical box. And so nobody showed up, and then we saw like some AT&T vans in the neighborhood and we're like, what the fuck is going on? So we went out into the alley and there were like,
those are just camouflaged rape vans.
Yeah, there was like a AT&T van plus one of those like cherry picker things like up in the, working on a pole in the alley, and we're like, what is going on? So we went over and talked to them, and we're like, yeah, there's like a serious problem with this box. We don't think we can fix it. And I was like, so do you think this is going to be fixed, you know, within a day or two? He's like, I'm sure I'm supposed to tell you that, but if I did, I'd be lying. I have no idea when this is going to be fixed. And so then like on Saturday, Melissa called and she's like, what is going on? And I'm like, well, it's been shifted over from technicians and repair side to the construction side. Like apparently they needed to just install a new like fiber box as if it was like a completely new connection. And they said, we think that maybe like a moving truck or something hit the box and just damaged it beyond repair. And I was like, okay, well, you know, telling me this any day earlier than Saturday in the week would have been helpful. I could have done any number of other things instead of just waiting around for you guys. And so I was in the process of trying to get Comcast cable when a neighbor of mine was wondering why I was outside without a coat. and I was explaining why I was doing that, because I had my phone also relied on the internet, because the phone service here is so terrible that I use the internet for my phone service. And so I had to be outside to get any kind of signal at all. And he's like, well, why don't you just use my wireless until they fix it? And I was like, that would be awesome. And it worked. I could see it from the office. And so then I had borrowed wireless for a couple of days. And then magically AT&T somehow managed to fix it Saturday and Sunday. And then Monday night, they reconnected us.
What was it like being without internet for an entire week, Kevin? Did you learn the value of just, you know, spending quiet, contemplative time with yourself and with your loved ones?
I did end up eating two of my roommates, just because, you know, cannibalism seemed like the only option.
Were they the two that I don't like? Probably. That's funny, because which two of those three people do I not like? You can't tell me for certain.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I think my problem was, this is, you know, super first world, like, I'm an asshole because I'm complaining about not having internet. Oh my God, you know, I'm cry for me or whatever. I think the problem wasn't that I didn't have internet, because if I was like, you know, I'm going backpacking for a week, I'm not going to have internet, that's fine. If I'm just deciding that I'm not going to have the internet for a week, that's fine. I have like tons of things that I can do offline. It was the not knowing what was going on, being told more or less every day that the problem would be solved either that day or by the next morning or whatever, and not having any like recourse or ability to go anywhere else, because I was sort of trapped in the closet or trapped at home waiting for technicians to show up that just never came. Like, it was just like, yeah, super I don't know, emasculating or whatever. It was I felt cut off at the knees. I felt like I just couldn't do anything, and I just got stir crazy and angry.
Wow, if cutting you off at the knees is a significant emasculation, I think I've gained a new respect for you, Kevin.
I got a prison tattoo. I started working out. What else did
okay
I watched some movies.
A prison tattoo, like you melted down some chess pieces on the radiator.
Yep, and then used a Bic. I sharpened a Bic and injected them directly into my veins.
All right, so sweet. So now you have like a barbed wire swastika on your chest?
Yep, that says mom.
Good, good. My mother is a barbed wire Nazi. Hey, speaking of your mom, I've been using the shit out of that sweet-ass incense burner that your mom got for Christmas.
Yeah, my girlfriend's really jealous. She's like, why didn't she get me one of those?
Oh, man, what did your mom get your girlfriend for Christmas?
Some pajamas that were the wrong size.
Huh.
That's a little weird.
Yeah.
Is she like, were they like, maybe you should lose some weight to please my son?
I mean, they were too small, so I guess okay. So, yeah.
So maybe you should gain some weight to provide more adequate birthing hips for my son. What do you think your mom was trying to say? Do you think your mom was trying to say, I found these pajamas in the garbage?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think my girlfriend and I also got your girlfriend an article of clothing that was the wrong size.
Yeah, yours was like the one that you guys got was a t-shirt that was like XL, and my mom got her a pair of pajamas that was small, neither of which are her size. So
they didn't have the right size of the it was the right t-shirt to get her, certainly.
Oh yeah,
but it was the wrong. They didn't have the right size in stock. God damn you, Double Fine.
That
why don't you get your shit together?
Super great idea, actually.
Double Fine Games. Yeah, so anyway, Kevin's mom got me a really sweet incense burner for Christmas. It's like a pottery sort of a tube with a bunch of filigreed holes in it, and then you put the incense in it upside down. So it burns incense super fast. Like, you light a stick of incense and you put it in the cap of this thing, and then you put it in the thing, and then the smoke comes out the holes, and the whole stick of incense burns in like 30 seconds, and then your house is just filled with like fucking choking
Nag Champa.
Vanilla or Nag Champa or pine or cinnamon scented incense smoke, and your cat is kind of freaking out, and your girlfriend is sort of like coughing and her eyes are watering, and you're like, this is fucking great.
It's the way incense was meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to, it is supposed to fuck you up, right? I mean, that's what incense is for. It's like a spiritual journey.
Well, that's why when you get angry, you're incensed. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. It's like, oh man, I'm all fucked up from being incensed. Like that time I lit some incense in this sweet-ass incense burner that Kevin's mom gave me, and now I'm like high from just hypoxia.
Have you ever seen those like I don't know, Catholic. I don't. They're probably not Catholic, but the church, like in
like a censor.
Yeah, the censors. That's
yeah.
Thing those things chains. Are nuts. Yeah, those are good.
That's what you do. You go and you do you starve your parishioners of oxygen until they will believe just whatever you tell them. Mm-hmm. That's the like the primary mechanism by which religion spread back in the days of the
censor. Well, that and making their incense out of mushrooms.
That's true. Yeah. We burn some myrrh and frankincense and some psilocybin.
Yep.
But you got your internet back.
Yes.
You know, we take it for granted when it works. And then when it doesn't work, we remember, oh, right, our entire livelihood depends on this one super unreliable, not particularly well-regulated utility.
It made me question the desire that everybody seems to have to put everything on the cloud. 'Cause if you really don't have any local storage copies of any of your stuff, if everything really does exist in the cloud and you lose internet access, you're screwed. And like, it's, there's nothing saying that like AT&T and Comcast and all those people are going to be around. And if the major providers go out, I don't even know how, what that means for everybody else. Right. Like,
I mean, I think the likelihood of AT&T just ceasing to exist in any meaningful way is pretty slim. Right? I think the likelihood of our Google Docs with no warning becoming unavailable and now we can never look at our sweet porn spreadsheets again. No, I mean, I like to... The way that I store my porn is a pixel at a time in a spreadsheet cell. I have this utility that converts all of my my porn MPEGs into individual frames as images stored in a spreadsheet.
Each sheet is one frame. It's pretty nice that they added all those different colored cells so that you actually could make it full color instead of just
It's kind of dithered. It's kind of dithered, but what are you gonna do?
You can use ASCII
not
characters.
Look at porn.
I was in high school in the 90s. This is not my first rodeo vis-a-vis dithered porn.
ASCII.
I remember going and buying a Super VGA video card with the primary purpose of making it easier for me to jack off.
Because like, there was like a good thing I have a job.
There are going to be so many more colors to jack off to on this Tandy 1000EX. No, I think that was after that. This is my Packard Bell 486-20. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, 256 colors at 640 by 480.
I remember when... What was it? That like getting Super VGA graphics and a sound blaster, I was like... This is the pinnacle of computing. Like, it's just never going to get any better than this.
Man, that fucking opening crawl, the load screen for Wing Commander where is warming up, that fucking...
Blew my mind.
Yep.
Ugh. Can we ever have anything like that again? Is there ever going to be something that, like, comes on the screen and you're like, wow, that's just incredible or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it does... it does seem... In general, like, you know, the PS4 is just... You know, the PS3 was not to the PS2 what the Super Nintendo was to the Nintendo, right? Because by and large, the technical hurdles are now a matter of degree rather than a matter of, like, fundamental composition. But, I don't know, there'll be something. I remember how blown away I was by real audio the first time I saw it. I'm like, whoa, you're telling me that somehow... audio is playing in real time in a way that literally does not require 60 or 70 year old radio technology.
Was it local or was it fucking mine? Was it streaming at that point? Was that just like...
No, it was streaming. I mean, it was real audio was like, but it was like streaming audio over like a 14.4 modem.
Wow.
Which was technically pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Although, I don't know. Because that was before the MP3 codec had been invented.
The irony being that, you know, the modems are over phone lines, which have been able to stream audio, like,
No, I know. Why was that impressive? Why was it impressive? Oh, there's audio streaming over one of the multiple devices in this house that has been capable of streaming audio for since well before my parents were born. Yeah, you know. Was what it was, though. It's pretty sweet. And then that gave way to Shoutcast. Who uses that? Yes. Am I right? The joke is that this... Before you hear it, is going out over a Shoutcast station.
What? Huh?
How many Shoutcast stations even exist? Are we like the last holdout?
I think it's just one. I think it's just us. The protocol is only there is one. There's a guy in a warehouse running that protocol just for us.
Turning a crank.
Yeah, the Shoutcast crank. Mm. What have you been up to, Riff?
I bought a lot of salad dressing.
Yeah. Why? And how?
Because it's the most delicious salad dressing in the world, and
this is the salad dressing that you just do shots of.
Yeah.
Okay.
That garlic stuff.
I bought like 12 bottles of it. Huh. I bought a case.
Oh, we got our first request for deodorant. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that guy's deodorant is en route. If it's Sweet. Not if it's not already there.
The mini
getting there
deodorants.
Soon. Yeah. Yep. So, I wasn't fucking kidding. If you want one of those mini deodorants, email me.
How many of those do you have to give away?
I bought 24 of them.
Okay.
So far, I've given away one.
So, you're doing
pretty good shape so far. Yeah. I'm telling you, if the demand spikes, then I'm going to have to change my policy. But,
maybe you can get people to send you something in exchange for a deodorant.
Oh, yeah. Send me some of your used deodorant. Oh, also, this deodorant is used. I should mention that one of the things I do whenever I buy anything in bulk is I sort of mark it with my scent.
Which is kind of ironic when it's deodorant in question.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, if I get like toothbrushes in bulk, they are all going in my ass and then in the drawer. And then when it's time for a toothbrush, it's like, oh, cool. I can tell this one's mine. See, I have these glands that secrete a musk that allows me to identify things that have had that musk secreted on them.
Hmm.
Also, a crucial ingredient in artificial raspberry flavoring.
What?
Oh,
yeah, castoreum. Comes from beaver buttholes. Anytime that you've ever had something with artificial raspberry flavoring, that has had some juice extruded from beaver buttholes in it. You think that I'm making this up. This is the
I
kind of thing that I would make up, but
does.
I am not.
Wow, huh, okay.
The more you know, buddy. You look on the internet, everything will get ruined.
The awesome part is I think that probably still qualifies as natural flavors because it's not an artificial process by which it is created.
I mean, everything is natural.
I mean, not by their definitions, right? Like the...
Yeah, by who's... I'm not going to let the man tell me what natural is. The man? What has he ever done besides make everything that I care about?
It's true.
Don't you like...
See, it's all natural.
Trees? God,
we're
man
part of
can't,
nature.
The man can't make a tree.
Yeah, the man can buy a tree and plant it in a place that looks really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
See, if nature provides a sweet-ass landscape, that's just an accident. Man can take some trees and some rocks and make a sweet-ass landscape on purpose.
The man could genetically manipulate a tree.
He could. Man could take some rocks and make a fucking sweet-ass tower and then fill it with skeletons.
Yeah.
And that would be pretty sweet.
It's true.
Nothing sweeter than a tower filled with sweet-ass skeletons.
Well, getting a sword from the skeletons.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do? I mean... What goes at the top of a tower? Tell me that, buddy. What but a sword? Nothing.
Yep.
You can't tell me anything but a sword because there isn't anything but a sword that goes at the top of a sweet-ass tower.
A wizard.
Well, okay, but the wizard has a sword.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not some sissy Harry Potter-ass wizard with, oh, look at me, I'm going to use my wand to disarm a Lolo, you. That's that spell, right? Disarm a Lolo.
Disarm a Lolo?
Yeah. That's what they say.
Yeah.
And then Gandalf is like, fuck you, Harry Potter. I got Glamdring. And then he chops his head off.
Yep, just cuts his fucking head off.
Man.
That'd
Wizards with staves,
good.
greater than wizards with wands.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry,
all you wand fans.
What about staff and no sword versus wand plus sword?
Huh. Okay, that's a good question, because swords rule.
Yep.
Wands are for pussies. staffs rule.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But not quite as much so as a sword.
So I think that a wand is actually a negative in terms of power for a wizard. So like, a wizard with a staff is greater than a wizard with a wand, but a wizard without a staff is also greater than a wizard with a wand. Right? So, like, if you want, it depends on what your goal is, right? If the goal is, I would like some really fancy wallpaper for my tower, then you want a wizard with a wand, right? If you think, I would like... Like a macrame coat of arms to hang above my fireplace. A wizard with a wand is where you want to go for that. Because the wizard with the wand is not going to give you any safety regulations bullshit. Like, maybe you should put the macrame far away from the fireplace because an errant spark might ignite your macrame. Fuck up your whole tower. I say, listen... You wand-waving pussy. This tower is made of stone, like a real wizard's tower. So I don't want to hear any of your bullshit about it burning down. Are you making it out of some sort of crazy, extra flammable magic macrame that, like jet fuel, is capable of melting solid steel?
I kind of hope so, because that actually sounds
good. That would
awesome.
Be pretty cool, because then you could make like little grenades out of that macrame. Yeah. Man, you light them and you hurl them at your enemies, and then their armor all melts.
So in the scheme of wand, staff, and sword, where does a glowing orb fit?
Glowing orb is pretty cool. So you can do sword and orb, and that's pretty cool. Right. I mean, basically, a wand is worth -5 points.
Okay.
Unless your goal is some pussy bullshit.
Okay.
Right. That's the lesson here.
What if you're a symphony or orchestra conductor?
But that's a different kind of wand. That's not a magic wand. That's a functional wand.
Well, what also, if, those guys what typically aren't wizards.
Musicians are trolls and goblins.
Oh. Well, are you hoping to conduct a symphony of destruction?
Or a symphony of the night?
Okay. In both of those cases, I think what you want is actually like some sort of a crown that lets you mind control.
Is there
trolls.
A goblin with little mallets playing a skeleton like a xylophone?
Oh, that would be pretty cool. Or a bunch of different skulls. Yeah. Like a xylophone made out of stormtrooper helmets.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. So we've ventured into fanfic territory, so I think it's time to move on. What have you been up to since... Well, what did you do with yourself besides constantly check to see if the internet was available while the internet was unavailable, Kevin?
Well, I did take the opportunity to finish some of the games that I had not had a chance to finish. Paper Mario. I actually went all the way through to the end of that, which is a ton of content. Like, that game goes on and on, and there's like, it keeps, up until probably 3/4 of the way through, it's continuing to introduce you to new systems, which I thought was interesting.
It's even more content if you count the one I played.
That's true.
I am actually kind of surprised that you stuck with this one, Kevin, because normally these RPGs that I'm really excited about and have really fond memories of, you are like, this is bullshit. This is just some JRPG turn-based bullshit and I don't care.
So I enjoyed the really hard battles that they would have, like basically the boss fights, because those were ratcheted up a level where you really did have to think pretty carefully about what you were doing in order to get through them. And I just really sort of resented all of the sort of what I felt were like grindy fights. Like I spent a lot of time trying to avoid hitting other monsters if I could, and was extremely happy when I finally got the badges that let you just defeat them from the sort of the walking around screen instead of having to go into the individual fights. And it was, I really wanted to see you. I feel like this is a pretty important game for you in terms of understanding what you appreciate about systems. And I really wanted to know, you know, in a real visceral sort of like tangible way. Like what it was all about. And
this is a thing that you were doing for me, and all I did during this period of time was forget your birthday. You're as good a friend as I'm not.
For my birthday, though, you recommended that I download that iOS game called Hundreds.
Yeah.
Which was actually really cool. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Did that actually make up for me forgetting your birthday?
I assumed that was my birthday present, was you telling me to go download this game.
Wow. Kevin's birthday just got a lot cheaper, huh, Zach?
Here's a question. Kevin,
yes.
I could say, without going out on too much of a limb, that you and I are buddies,
yeah,
right, Kevin?
I think that's true.
Okay. So I don't think that I would actually be upset if you forgot about my birthday.
Your birthday is so easy to remember, though, that it's... It would be
well, that's because you are a nice guy, and no. Everybody's birthday is really easy to remember.
I like the number 7, which, you know, that helps, right?
Well, I like the numbers 1 and 5 because you put them together and they make the age of the perfect girl, am I right?
Oh, you like 51-year-olds?
Yeah, I sure
do. 6-year-olds, but...
6? Oh, fuck. anyway, I'm trying to make myself feel better about forgetting your birthday, Kevin.
You shouldn't feel bad, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's not like I don't really do anything important or special on my birthday usually, so it's not like I care at all.
I normally go to a place and drink some beer.
The night before my birthday, Melissa and I went out and went to Violet Hour and just had a really nice dinner and a bunch of cocktails. That was fun.
Good.
That was about it that we did sort of as a celebration kind of thing.
Your birthday is so soon after Christmas that it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, that sucks. I feel bad for both people that have to think of presents for me at all, and also people who want to get me presents on both Christmas and my birthday, because that just doubles the pain.
So I guess my Christmas gift to you was also a birthday gift to you on account of my forgetting about your birthday.
Yeah, but that Hundreds game is really cool. It's going back to
hey, here's this thing you should buy for $1. It is a pretty good game.
The way that it works is it was sort of a long time in coming. It was originally like a Flash game that didn't have a lot going on. But it was like you press on a circle. As a Flash game, you know, you would mouse over a circle and then you would like hold down the mouse button and it would grow in size. And the idea was to like make it get to a certain sort of threshold without hitting the walls or
that threshold being 100.
100, yeah. Ugh. Hence the name of the game. And so the guy who originally made it open sourced the source code, and some of the guys over at Semi Secret Software, which were the people that made Cannibal and a couple other games, thought it was interesting and then just sort of took it and ran with it and made sort of a more involved game. And then sort of at the last minute, they decided to throw in this sort of 90-degree kind of puzzle mystery thing in it as well, which was kind of awesome.
They played Fez, and they thought,
yeah,
we want to be just like Phil Fish.
And so they like give you these like secret messages every so often that you can just choose to decrypt if you want to. I was going to say it has no bearing on the gameplay, which isn't entirely true, because there is like a meta puzzle that if you solve sort of unlocks a superpower in the game, but you know, I beat the game without having that at all. So it's not like it's important.
I'm somewhere in the low 80s. But I've been continuing to play it.
It gets, the last couple of levels are hard as fuck.
Some of them just randomly in the middle. I mean, every once in a while there'll be one that just takes 30 tries to beat.
And yeah.
The game impresses me in terms of like the economy of its aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like it remains interesting despite the fact that it is pretty much just some circles in some space of various colors. And then there are subtle and obvious variations on those colors that indicate different behaviors. Every new kind of object that you can interact with gets a level where it just explains to you what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right? About sort of giving you sort of an in-game tutorial about what it's doing. Have you gotten to any of the levels where you can't see anything?
No.
Okay. That's when it starts to get a little rough, and then there's one, I think it's level 99 in particular, that is the screen is almost entirely full of objects, and you cannot see anything unless you are touching the screen, which most of the time results in just the game ending immediately.
Huh.
So it becomes like that was the one that was like the most frustrating to beat.
Well, I mean, you spend $1 in the cash shop and you get the I cannot die power up for 30 seconds.
Is that a thing?
No.
Or did,
I was trying to make a statement about.
Oh, I thought I wasn't sure if you, because I know they did some sort of update after I beat the game, but I wasn't sure if that was like a real thing or not.
No, as far as I know, you just buy that game and then you have it. I decoded one or two of the messages. The one that you just read in order to decode it. That one I was pretty proud to be able to decode, and I did that. I haven't really bothered with too much of the message stuff. Is it cool?
I enjoyed decoding it. Like, I enjoy that kind of stuff. Most of them are just cryptograms. A couple of them are more complicated than that, including a Vigneur cipher, which is polyalphabetic substitution stuff.
How does explain how a Vigneur cipher works and whether that's the right name for it or not?
So, what you do with that kind of cipher is you write out the alphabet 26 times, rotating the alphabet one letter at a time. So you basically have this 26 by 26 grid. And you take your plain text message and you take your key phrase or your key word or whatever, and you write that out underneath your message, just repeating over and over and over again. And then...
So like you wrap it at 26 characters.
No, you know. Let's say your key word is, or your key phrase is Star Wars, right? STARWARS. So it's eight letters long, and let's say your plain text message is "Hello world, you're looking great today" or whatever. So you would write out "Hello world."
What a
you're
positive example message.
And then underneath that, you would write Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, just until you have the same number of characters in sort of just repeating Star Wars as you do "Hello world, you're looking great today," or whatever. And then, so that first H, which matches up with the first S in Star Wars, you go down the alphabet list until you hit the S row. You go over to where the H would be in the sort of plain text alphabet, and then that's the letter that you use. Right.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a cryptogram that shifts through different
right. So it is a per letter Caesar shift,
yes,
based on the modulo letter of the code phrase.
Yes, exactly.
Huh. Okay.
So you don't have to not having the key makes it pretty tough to solve, because standard unless the message is really long, standard like frequency analysis doesn't help nearly as much. But if you have any idea like how long the key phrase is, or
was the key phrase for this one hundreds?
It was not. There's a couple of pretty clever things that they did to help you solve some of the harder puzzles. And I don't want to spoil them.
Okay.
But there are clues. So, I don't know if you're going to want to stick with it to do that stuff, but it's fun.
I'm pretty lazy.
So, and you know, if our listeners want to do it, I definitely don't want to spoil it for them. So,
hey, speaking of codes and languages, did you guys play any of the game that I told you you had to play, Counterfeit Monkey?
I did not yet.
I downloaded it, but I've not yet played it. Sorry.
So it is a new IF game. Apparently, several years in the making by Emily Short, who is fairly well regarded in the sort of modern, I would call it a resurgence, but it's more like it's just like a big dish that continues to contain a lot of IF. There's not really a surge, right? It's just sort of like, oh no, we discovered this new reservoir of IF, and it's been pretty consistent because nobody's drinking it.
It's more a resurgence of people outside the IF community remembering that there's an IF community.
But Emily Short has made a bunch of stuff that I never got super excited about, because it seemed it seemed like her stuff was always more, and let's talk about gender roles in video games, but her stuff was more about like the sort of stories and characters and less about it being like a video game, which means it's less like the kind of sort of systems driven IF that I like. Mm. But this game is really, really good. Like, I am not going to say that this game has... I would not characterize this game as a game with the same emotional impact as Photopia, right? Because that... I would say until I played The Walking Dead, Photopia was at the top of that particular peak in my memory of the game that had the most, like, sort of jarring emotional effect on me. It is slouching towards Bedlam-esque in terms of what it does. Like, basically, you are a sort of a revolutionary secret agent in a world in which it has been discovered that by altering the names of things, you can alter reality. And so basically she took, like, all right, this is like a modern sort of like English university town is what it reads like to me. I don't know that it's actually what it is, but so imagine a modern world in which we have figured out that, like, by using an R remover on something, you can change it from one thing into another thing. What sorts of standards bodies would arise to control this? What sorts of things would be prohibited? What sorts of things would be forbidden? What sorts of books would you find on the shelves at a university which nobody cared about until it became the case that, like, linguistics was the most important thing ever in the world? Like, and so your primary tool for interacting with the world is a letter remover that you can tune to whatever letter, and all of the puzzles that you solve are by, like, taking a thing and turning it into another thing. So it's more or less like gameplay-wise, it plays like Norden Burt couldn't make head or tails of it. Did you ever play that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was good, but it was very silly, mm-hmm. right? It was not... It didn't really have anything to say, I guess, other than, like, haha puns or haha spoonerisms or haha, you know, palindromes. This is like that, except it takes place in an extremely well-developed world, and it is fucking great. And so you have, like, your primary tools are the ability to remove letters from things. You get some restoration gel, which returns things to their original forms. You ultimately get some origin paste, which allows you to take items that you have altered and hide the fact that they have been altered so that the, like, police, so that you can, like, get past the police with things that they don't know from looking through their monocles that you have illegally altered.
Can you because alter you something are, multiple times? Like, can
yeah,
you take...
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, like, you... In order to... Like, there's a point where you can't... Like, this is a spoiler for a puzzle, but it... To me, the puzzles that involve removing letters from things to make them into other things are fairly straightforward, right? Like, it's... So, yeah. Like, you need... You can't get past this certain point because it is a road, and it's like, you're going to need a car if you want to get past this point. And you eventually find a farmer's market where you can buy some chard, right? And so you use an H remover on the chard to get a card, and then you use a D remover on the card to get a car.
So every step has to be a word, but...
Yeah, and you can't make a living thing. You can't, like, turn something into a concept. But everything that you try to do... Like, this is the kind of thing that makes me feel like maybe there are people who are going to appreciate some of the effort that we've put into Word Realms. Like, everything that you try to do that would result in a word but doesn't work in terms of the game has a response.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is a fucking great game for dudes like us. it's tricky. She said, and I imagine this is from just playtesting, that it is like a 6 or 8 hour game for an experienced interactive fiction player. And it's good. It's like, it so far it has managed to stretch that gimmick out into a really satisfying amount of gameplay. And just, I was not expecting the sort of like just crazy spy thriller packaging that it was in to work so well. But yeah, Counterfeit Monkey by Emily Short. It's fucking great. And it's free because there's no fucking way you're ever going to get anybody to pay for IF. Hey, whatever happened to Andrew Plotkin? He, like, 2 or 3 years ago, he was like, I'm going to quit my job and try to make a living off of IF. And then I'm pretty sure he starved to death in a gutter.
No, he's still going. He's working on a fairly elaborate new IF game that appears to be all about alchemy.
Is he going to sell it? Is he going to try to sell it?
I think it's... don't quote me on this, but I think it's going to be normally free, but he's also going to be publishing it as an app, which will cost like $1 or something.
And we'll do a special edition, which contains a big-titted bikini torso with all of its limbs ripped off.
God! See, I had managed to forget about that.
See, why can't Andrew Plotkin make games like that? What else have you been playing, Kevin?
I played a little bit, then like 15 minutes of that Wayward game, which has been touted as like a by some of our listeners, I guess, as a cross between Minecraft and a roguelike.
It is very similar to that Make No Wonder game that was making the rounds a little while back. It's all in HTML5, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. It seems like it's got a lot of stuff going on. I did not succeed in accomplishing much of anything except for getting killed.
I hit a spider with a shovel.
Yeah, I mean, I killed a couple spiders and a snake, and I slept on a roll of leaves until it got too dark to do anything, and then was killed by something I couldn't see. But I'm curious to go back to that when I have some more time to, like...
Was it invisible AIDS?
It might have been. It's so hard to know.
Invisible
you can't see.
AIDS sounds kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Whew.
I guess all AIDS is kind of invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I
was
went back... And
an
I
invisible
finished.
Serial killer?
I also finished trying to...
Was it a poisoned bowl of invisible cereal?
No.
Oh, good. How was trying to? Did it have like a sudden bullshit timed level at the end?
It did not. It had like a boss fight, but it was more or less the same kind of skill set that you'd been learning how to use throughout the game, except for the fact that like I basically spent the entire game as the wizard, and then the final boss fight you basically need to be the thief and the fighter. So the wizard.
There's really no reason to ever be anything other than the wizard the entire time, except when the game is like, "Hey, fuck you! There's a fighter in here, you know."
I mean, so there were, I'm gonna say, 3 or 4 puzzles that I thought were like, "Wow, that was really clever. That required me to like really think about the different powers I had available and use them in an interesting combination." But most of the game was just kind of more of the same. I can just build a stack of boxes to get past this kind of stuff.
Wait, does that guy have a wand? Or is he just waving his hands around?
I think he might just be waving his hands around.
So you give him a wand, and then suddenly you got to be the thief and the fighter.
But, like, it was... So the game is just, you know, gorgeous, and the art is awesome, except for when it fucking interferes with your ability to play the game, which is like when a potion falls behind a foreground art element that you can walk behind, but you can't see anything behind it or whatever. Like there's just a bunch of stuff. There are situations where they hide stuff, you know, there's like hidden stuff, which is just you going behind a foreground object, and finding a, you know, a cave or whatever, which whatever, that's I guess acceptable. It's just kind of annoying. But like when you're just trying to collect all the experience globes or whatever, and they make it effectively impossible because they hide stuff in behind art objects that you just, there's no way to see behind them except for just touching, like walking up and like running against every surface. That sort of irked me quite a bit.
See, that's the kind of gameplay that I think my dad would have really gotten into. Because, like, when we were playing, like,
The
Might and Magic games as a kid, he delighted in just trying to walk through every wall on the map to make sure that he found all of the secret doors. Man. No, I know, man. I could not have been, like, it's like, let's go play some golf or be real into guns or something for all the relating to that I can do.
Yeah.
I guess it must be a patience thing. Mm. Maybe, if I grow a mustache, it will make me more patient.
Hmm.
And then I will start wanting to bump up against every object.
Huh. Hmm.
Hmm. So, I mean, well, that's good that you played a bunch of, you were able to play a bunch of video games. Did you feel guilty about not being able to work?
Yes, very good. Much so. Yeah. It's frustrating.
As your friend, I'm sorry. As your boss, good. Riff. Video games play?
Video games played. I played a little bit of Hotline Miami. Did I talk about that the last time we did a show?
You mentioned it. I don't remember the last time we did a show.
It's an interesting game. I can't play it for very long at a time because it makes me feel like I'm going psycho, partly because some of the music in it is also music from Space Funeral. Yeah, did you play that?
No.
It's an RPG Maker game that is incredibly surreal, but surreal in the sort of disturbing, creepy sense, not in the goofy Purple Monkey Dishwasher kind of sense.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just very twisted and strange, and it's got this one song in the soundtrack that is also in the Hotline Miami soundtrack, so it... playing Hotline Miami and hearing that kind of puts me in that sort of Space Funeral frame of reference, which makes it even more strange on top of the fact that Hotline Miami is already kind of psycho with all the NPC characters being the same guy in different hats and just generally strange things that happen. But yeah, it's a neat game. It's like, I don't know, it's like Quentin Tarantino did a Order of Operations puzzle.
Huh.
But I got to like level 3 or 4 and kind of hit a wall and haven't been able to get any further because I figured out what order to do stuff in to get like all but the last couple or three guys, but I haven't managed to get those guys yet because you don't have any hit points or anything. Just if anybody gets a bullet at you or hits you with a pipe, you're just instantly dead and you have to start the level over.
Do you feel like the game is doing its job on you, which is to say,
to making be kind you, of disturbing?
Making you uncomfortable with the level of violence that you're participating in?
I don't know if it's the violence per se that is uncomfortable because it's all very pixel cartoon violence.
So it's not making
it's
you
not
feel
at all realistic.
It's not
violence.
Making you feel bad about the violence as much as making you feel slightly weird about jacking off to it.
Well, yeah, I mean those rubber animal masks are pretty hot.
Yeah.
It's not the so
Man,
much.
Man, I heard
the...
that if you put one of those on and get the neck extra tight, that it really enhances things.
It's not so much the violence that disturbs me, so much as the creepy dreamlikeness of everything else in the game. It just has that very like I'm going insane kind of feel to it. But yeah, I play a little bit of that. I'm making my way slowly through Borderlands 2. I say slowly because I'm spending more time replaying Fallout 3.
Riff, do you think that Borderlands 2 is doing its job insofar as it is making you feel guilty about all the violence that you're participating in?
No. All those bandit dudes are pretty satisfying to blow their heads off with a sniper rifle.
I continue to not... like, whatever it is... about, I don't know how to phrase this. So there is the hook that a Diablo or a Diablo 2 or a Diablo 3 or a Torchlight or a Torchlight 2 or a Borderlands or a Borderlands 2 or a Titan Quest or a Deathspank will put into you as far as like going into randomly generated environments to kill randomly generated enemies, to collect randomly generated loot that ups your stats. Mm-hmm. And
did Deathspank have randomly generated environments?
No, neither does Borderlands, though. I was just saying that because it sounded good as a phrase. You caught me.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I'll try to only say things that are 100% true from now on.
Okay. Including that statement.
But, like, Diablo 3 didn't even really do this for me. And, is there, like, a Tony Hawk thing going on where the first time a thing happens to you, like, say the first time you date a 15-year-old girl, like, when you're 15, it's just super magical, right? And you're just like, oh, man, I want to do this forever. But then you realize, as you get older, I can't do this forever, or I will constantly be in jail.
So what
the first Tony Hawk game that you play is really good, and then the next one is like, oh, why'd they add all this extra shit, right? But there is a guy who played the one before the one that was your first one that said of the one that you loved, why did they add all this extra shit?
Well, like, sure. It's whether you think Joel or Mike is the better Mystery Science Theater host.
Right. It depends on who you
first encountered.
You know, my opinion about that particular thing is I don't care.
Really?
Like, they're both funny.
Wow, you're the only person I've ever met that did not have a strong preference for one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're both great.
I mean, I think they're both great, but the one that I happen to prefer, I think, is definitely preferable.
Which one's that?
I don't want to say, because I don't want to start this argument in our forums.
No. Well, so I know that there are people who played and got super into Diablo 2 the way that I did.
And me
that
as well.
Also got super into Borderlands. Mm-hmm. Right? But Borderlands had the same problem in my experience that Torchlight had, which was that, like, I can see all of these systems and I can see the way in which these are supposed to be manipulating my brain chemicals. And maybe it's the fact that I can see them that makes them not work.
Huh. But you got into Binding of Isaac, which doesn't have procedurally generated loot. It had the procedurally generated dungeons and a wide selection of...
I would not put loot. The Binding of Isaac FTL in the same...
Because those were... The difference is that it's the rewards that are generated in Borderlands and in...
Well, I mean, while I understand that these are fun, that's a fundamental difference, it's just switching two variables, right?
No, but it's not really. I think there's a big difference in the primary loop, right? The primary loop in Diablo or Borderlands is kill guy, get thing, right. Whereas the primary loop in the Binding of Isaac is optimize level, have state.
Is it optimized level or is it survive dudes get things?
Well, survive dudes is a prerequisite to optimize level.
Okay.
Right? But it's...
Yeah, the things that you get in Binding of Isaac are not your ultimate.
They're always the same. Like, maybe
there's
something that
you
haven't seen before, but they're not like... Yeah, but they're not like... They're not like a... The Skinner box does not drop a Skinner box. I guess is the difference there. There's only sort of one layer of it.
What about the like combinations, like the novel combinations, like that? That's a thing where there's some emergent sort of complexity.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying. I don't want to argue this point.
No, I mean,
I don't believe it.
But it's worth examining. Like, what is the actual difference there? I mean, the fact that the Binding of Isaac is a thing where you play a game of it at a time. Like, in a lot of ways, the Binding of Isaac is a lot more similar to Pac-Man than it is to Diablo, right? Because it does not have long-term character progression. It has alterations to the environment that occur over time, which is a neat end run around that kind of thing. Like, you don't get more powerful the more you play The Binding of Isaac. You get better at playing The Binding of Isaac, and The Binding of Isaac gets harder in response to that, which is different than... Like, Diablo did not require any player skill to speak of, right? Because you can always just, like, start over and play through the early levels again and get a better hat, right? And I don't know what it is. Torchlight in particular. I played Torchlight, you know, and I played it for 4 or 5 hours, and I could just smell the manipulation. I just looked at it and I'm like, I am going through the same room over and over and over again. And Diablo 3 felt like that a little bit, but the seams were maybe a little less visible because they had a lot more art to throw at it, you know? Yeah. And there were a lot more actions that you could perform. There was just more, right? It was a many millions of dollars, many years game as opposed to a, you know, small team with a year game.
I mean, I felt that way with Dungeons of Dreadmore, literally seeing the same room layout over and over again.
Yeah, that game was only fun 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really fun.
I did not plummet to its depths, right? Like, because there were a bunch of skill trees that I didn't get to see fully. And it seemed like there were some cool things that I just didn't spend the time to find out about.
When I see something where every level has this one fucking room layout.
The zoo or whatever.
Just a particular, like, this is a room that has two little things jutting out of the north side of it that each have, like, a, you know, platypus nest in it or whatever those things are called.
Yeah. And there's a trap on this one tile.
Right. And knowing, like, all right, if... this is going to sound like an asshole thing to say, but if we made this game, we would have made 50 versions of that room that were different because it would have been clear and obvious to us that it was worth spending the time to make 50 different variations on this room so that people didn't just constantly say, oh, there's that room.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And it's weird to me when I encounter something where that doesn't happen. It is so much harder in even something like Diablo 3, right, where you're suddenly doing these things in 3D, which dramatically increases the complexity with which you have to, like, generate these. Although Diablo 3 topologically is a 2D game, right?
Right.
It is not meaningfully 3D in terms of the way that you're moving around. It's not like, oh, I'm on a ledge above this zombie, so I'm going to jump down on it and kill it. Like, no, I'm not. Like, the maps are unambiguously expressible in 2 dimensions. So, like, really, the window dressing of the 3D only makes the generation more complicated, and it makes it sort of more likely for you to see the cracks in it, which is probably the problem that they ran into with Torchlight. But, like, this is different with Borderlands, right? Borderlands doesn't randomly generate environments.
Right. They're designed.
It just randomly generates guns.
Right.
And I just don't fucking care. And why is that? Is it because I don't like guns? Is it because I don't... Is it because I already did this? You know?
I mean, I definitely...
Have you gotten into it? You got into Borderlands 1, right? You were playing it...
Yeah, I played Borderlands 1. You were playing it co-op. I couldn't get into... I played Borderlands 1 with Jenny co-op on the PlayStation, and I could not do it with Borderlands 2, and I don't know what the difference was. I don't know if it was the interface or the PlayStation controller shooting was somehow, I don't know, slipperier or something, that I couldn't get a handle on it or whatever it was, but I couldn't stand playing it on the PlayStation. But I'm pretty reasonably getting into it on PC.
But do you feel like it has its hooks in you? Do you feel like you want to know what is in this outhouse because it might be a really awesome gun? Like, does really awesome gun mean anything to you because of how awesome a gun might be?
It has its hooks in me in terms of wanting to see the rest of the story and wanting to hear the rest of the stuff that Handsome Jack says.
Right.
And getting a better gun out of an outhouse is a means to that end. I don't think I'm going to play a second playthrough after I finish this first one.
I mean, some of the gun things are pretty funny and novel, but I don't know. I don't know how long that lasts.
I heard my all-time favorite video game character bark the other day playing Borderlands 2. One of the bandits shouted, "I like my women like I like my coffee in the butt."
So all right.
I thought that was pretty good.
You found the bear's den. Let's celebrate with fighting.
Yeah.
There's a tranquility in magic, guys. I don't know if you know this. If you have the aptitude, you should apply to the Mages College at Winterhold. So I played World of Warcraft until I made the best farm, and then when it came time to log on again, I thought, you know, I've already made the best farm.
Yeah, what else do you
need? There's nothing for me here.
My guild kind of fell apart due to general dismay over our slow raid progression. So I don't know if I'm still going to be doing any more raiding or not. Although I guess I'll always be able to LFR.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you listen to ELO while you're doing LFR?
I could listen to NPR.
Okay, sure. You could listen to OMD.
OMG.
All right. Well, I think that all of those things are the things that I've been playing. Do you guys think that those are the things that you've been playing, or does anybody have
That's
anything
pretty
else?
Pretty much it. I've been playing a lot of Fallout 3, but I don't think I have anything new to say about it. Oh, except that the railway rifle is definitely my favorite all-time video game.
Is that the
gun.
One that posts dudes to walls?
Yes.
Posts dudes, like when you're like
staples.
Post
dudes
no bills.
To walls. Yeah.
Hey, Bill, stand in front of this wall.
Oh, it's so good, and it makes like a train whistle and steam shooting out noise when you shoot
Jeez.
It. And,
did Zach
see
did
violence?
Play
it's wonderful.
Kentucky mm-hmm. Route Zero.
I did actually. I bought it and I played the first I don't know 15 minutes of it.
Okay.
Maybe.
What was the title?
Kentucky Route Zero. Route Zero. It's it was a kind of an out of nowhere IGF finalist. Mm. I can't say that I am that impressed with it so far, but I need to I really like the writing. I really like the fact that it is like just crazy pretentious.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I mean, because something
it's committed.
Yeah, something that video games do not have. Like video games have a lot of short story, they have a lot of genre fiction. You know, they have a lot of like sort of sweeping epic fantasy and or sci-fi trilogies, which I guess are also just genre fiction, but they don't have a lot of poetry. And when something just flat out says like, hey, check it out, this video game that's poetry, you want to see how poetry it is, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna read
Bring
your
it.
I'm gonna play your poetry and see how it rocks me.
You didn't feel like Dear Esther was kind of like that?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't that stuff.
Oh, okay.
But there's not a lot of it. Right? And there are not a lot of things. I mean, I don't know. Do you think that like Gravity Bone is a poem?
No. I mean,
what about
I could see
back.
How you would say that. I have gone back and played Don't Look Back a couple times, and I still think it's super awesome, and it frustrates me that like I've recommended this to several people and they like consider it too hard to finish.
But like, it is really hard. I mean,
I that's what just blows my mind. I'm like, this was a game that I finished in 15 minutes and thought was like super amazing, and like I understand how like not everybody would be able to finish it in 15 minutes, but like it's not so long that it should be that daunting, and because it, like
right,
you
but
die,
but you don't like, but you don't know that until the, like I, to me, I am so happy that you and I can share the experience of having played that,
yeah,
conquered it and reaped the reward of the feelings that it made us feel in our beautiful little hearts.
Uh-huh.
But it is hard, like. I am going to recommend it to a million people in the hopes that five of them will play it and get something out of it. Right. Like the average, person, just in the set of people that I tell about this game, I do not expect them to tolerate the difficulty enough to actually beat it.
I guess.
I mean, because so it's like, super fucking unforgiving. Like the boss fight is super fucking hard.
V. Like that one, I could be like, yeah, that game is hard, right? But I feel like Don't Look Back isn't as much.
The boss fight is fucking crazy hard. Like the boss, and the thing is, you and I have played a ton of like 2D Castlevania games. You and I are guys who memorize the patterns of this boss fight so that you can get the reward for this experience is like,
sure,
that's a channel that's dug into our brains, but other people are not going to have the patience for that shit, right? Like, of our friends, Kevin, of the people that we go to fancy hipster cocktail bars with, uh-huh, I am guessing that we're the two who beat Metroid. Okay. Like, the two, sure, of X, where X is all the people we know, right? And that's, we're also the two that are going to get what there is to get out of Don't Look Back. So
here's a question. So, like, there are poems, like, you know, Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock or something like that. Like, there's a lot going on, and I could imagine recommending it to somebody and them, like, reading the first five or six lines and being like, yeah, I'm just not really digging this, you know, and, like, I would be, like, sad about it, but it's not like it is too hard for them to read.
Well, no, but I mean, I guess in that case, the example would be, like, does it connect with anything for them?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that in that particular example, like, the Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, that operates on a kind of thoughtful insecurity that not a lot of people have. But for the people who do have it, it is just a revelation that this fairly well-regarded literary guy from 75 years ago could encapsulate it so well, and that it is like, wow, this is not a new thing. This is not like the worries that I have are not new to the situation that I live in. The things that horrify me are universal.
Yeah.
Right? There have always been guys that felt like this. There have always been guys that were insecure in this way. There have always been guys that just wince when they look back on the stupid shit that they said and the ways in which normal people, normal women specifically, have responded to them and just thought, well, fuck, that's it. That's it. Just like, I just should just sit here and wait to die because no one's ever going to love me. Like, and that, I guess it's not for everybody, right? Like, the reason that it is so important to us is because we connect to it on some level that you can't make other people connect to something. And,
okay, but
I guess it does suck that with Don't Look Back, people could connect to it if they could tolerate the difficulty of the video game aspect of it, which throws a wrench into it, right? Because it no longer becomes like an experiential thing. It no longer becomes like a thing that you have in common because it touches on something that is more universal than
Walking Dead, the Love Song, which I have not yet played, and I apologize. I know I need to do that. What is it? It is not hard.
No, it's the gameplay. The gameplay in it is trivial.
Yeah.
Okay. So to the
extent that when it is criticized for barely being a game, I have to acknowledge, like, yes, that is true. That is also not at all important.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, that's, I guess that was my question, is like, is it so well regarded in some ways because there isn't that barrier and enough people have, like, mm-hmm, been able to sort of get it?
Yeah, and I think it is easy as, like, an asshole who can do something hard to say, well, this experience was only valuable because it was hard and because I was able to summon up the strength of will to right, beat the boss of Don't Look Back, that I got rewarded with this profound emotional experience. That, you know, that is has its face flown in by something like The Walking Dead, where it's like, oh, whoa, that was actually much more powerful. And also, I could imagine my mom experiencing this.
Right.
Because, you know, you don't have to be good at video games to experience it. Right? And I think that it is... That's a branch, right? Like, that is not what all games are supposed to be. That is not what all games are going to be, and it's not what, you know, it's not what it should... It, like, but having that as an option, having that as one of the genres.
Right.
One of the subheadings, paranormal teen romance.
I mean, I think that what problem, the problem is that I love puzzles, right? So like there is this part of solving puzzles where you look at something and you're not sure what's going on and you like sort of try a bunch of stuff and eventually something emerges and then you feel a sense of satisfaction because you have decoded it or you've like figured out the trick or you've understood the way in which something was obfuscated. And I guess there are just a bunch of people for whom that is not something that they care about or seek out. It's hard for me to understand why people are not excited by that kind of thing.
It is easier for them to get that from something that you would think of as a trivial leap of logic, right? I mean...
That's interesting.
So there is... The reason that, say, Family Guy is popular is that they will make a joke about something, and part of why that joke is funny is because of the chemical that gets released in your brain because somebody else just talked about a thing that I knew what it was, right? And that is a very similar thing to, oh, now I am on the same wavelength as this guy who made this really difficult puzzle because I have struggled through all of the obstacles that he put in front of me to solve this puzzle. Or she. I'm not going to be sexist about it. Just statistical. And... You know, like, I don't think that the satisfaction that you derive from solving a really complicated puzzle is somehow unique to the special snowflake that is your ability to experience satisfaction.
No,
right?
And I know,
I think other,
the thing.
Other people just don't need that in order to feel good about something, and that's great. Let's, I gotta pee.
Okay.
So we'll take a little breaky poo and then come back with the news. What's in the news, Kevin?
The news. So we have been away for a couple weeks, so there's been a bunch of stuff. This is probably old news for a lot of our listeners, but I'm gonna go through it anyway. CES happened. And there was a bunch of, you know, electronics and stuff. But there were a couple of interesting game-related announcements.
The Collegiate Ejaculation Society.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was wondering.
Ohio State had to eat the cracker.
So, did you see any of the new, like, gaming-type hardware that was announced?
Man, I didn't see shit, Kevin. I have not been outside... of the cave that I dug under my house for like 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, Razer announced a new tablet gaming system. So,
is that the thing with the two handles on either side of it? Oh, that looks so dumb.
I'm not exactly sure how one is supposed to interact with that device. It's got like two gamepads. I think it's meant to be like easily two player kind of situation. Those are like controllers on either side, and like you have the game between the two of you.
Wait, is this that thing where you're playing like a nuclear war game, and it shocks you when you defeat somebody else, the opponent's territory? This is a thing that happened in a James Bond movie in the 60s, but it seemed pretty awesome.
It probably is not that. What I am excited about is that they are continuing to, like, companies are continuing to try new things, right? Because it's not entirely intuitively obvious what the best interfaces are going to be, and something might catch on. You know, there might, like, a Kinect.
Oh, sure. When Steve Jobs said, I'm going to make a phone with a Mac on it, everybody was like, hey, what up, stupid? Wait, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard, you dummy. That's never going to work.
Yeah, there were a lot of naysayers. I'll show you. iPhone, and it turned out to be great. So, NVIDIA, though NVIDIA's announcement, their handheld system, Project Shield, looks pretty dumb. It,
You know, like, just figuratively, when I think, what do I want that is going to make me like a super badass? Oh, I've got it. A shield.
Okay, is that the one that looks like a black Xbox controller with a little
DS looks like
screen
you like,
sticking
yeah,
up
you,
out
well,
of it?
Not a DS screen. It looks like you super glued your phone to a Xbox controller. Yeah.
I actually super glued my phone to an Xbox controller, and that's pretty fun.
But you also super glued your hands to it, so you really had no other choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. Because otherwise I'm not going to play that shit. Like, what?
It's going to be an Android system, so theoretically Android games will run on it. But
oh, good! It will run all will run all those Ouya games. I'm so excited about.
The, you know, like, we'll see. But I'm not particularly encouraged by that particular route that they seem to be trying. But you know, again, innovation. Who knows? Maybe it'll catch on. I honestly, on the flip side, I have been continually surprised that there has not been some sort of standardized Apple peripheral that is like a sanctioned gamepad thing that developers will know.
What I heard was that they specifically don't want that.
Yeah,
because they want to force people to.
Yeah, they want people to have to use the touchscreen and design games for the touchscreen. Yeah.
Well, and they don't. Like Steve Jobs, at least, didn't like computer games and didn't like was allowing them on iOS because they were both profitable and. Sort of, it was going to be inevitable anyway, but didn't want games. He just did not care about games and didn't want to.
I heard he also hated ladies' boobs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
he liked turtlenecks, though.
Okay.
And then Valve was at CES, and they didn't exactly have, public demos, but they had, a private... This was weird. They had, a private booth that had glass walls, so you could see stuff.
Where they were letting people rub Gabe Newell.
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah, he's like the Buddha. You rub his belly for luck. Mm.
But they were sort of demoing some new hardware for what is probably going to be... There are several different variants on a possible a living room computer slash...
Is it Android-based? Am I going to be able to play all my favorite Ouya games on it, Kevin?
It's Linux-based, actually. Yeah. So, but I mean, I don't think it's not going to be like a Steam OS, but it's
going
to run.
So basically, you'll turn it on, and then it will say, "All right, here is VI. Write your own drivers for all the hardware in this box to prove that you're entitled to play some video games."
I mean, I'm excited about a dedicated Steam box. I'm dubious about the Linux-ness of it and how many games that's going to have available.
All you'll see is the Steam Big Picture app, I think. And the idea, I mean, because I think Steam is committed, I think Valve is committed to porting all of their content to Linux.
But what fraction of Steam is Valve-made games?
Well, not a lot, but I think the idea is once that becomes a viable platform, then everybody will start developing for it.
I mean, also, 3 years from now, they could just have a version of Wine that will run three-year-old games no matter what they are, right? So it's not... I mean, I think that this is kind... This will take off if Windows 8 takes off and the PC stops being a viable gaming platform.
Because of Windows 8?
If it doesn't. If Microsoft figures out, oh, no, wait, the reason that we were successful in this arena is because we were not like Mac and they care about being successful in that arena, then, you know, I think that this might be an evolutionary dead end.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, Valve is going to do something interesting they really want to get involved and or drive that whole idea of gameplay that's completely portable. So let's say you're playing a game in your living room and it's time to go to school or whatever. So you you
play
touch
it
a button
in the classroom.
Suddenly, well, no, suddenly it's on your like iPod and you're playing that on the bus.
Suddenly it's on your Project Shield.
It's the same game. Yeah, whatever. It's on your Project Shield. And then you get
and then
to
you're
school.
Like, all right, so I blocked this one guy's blow and now it's time for me to attack. So I'm going to transfer this game over to my Razor's Edge.
Yeah. So.
Okay. And then I've gotten to school and I'm in the superintendent's office, so I need to transfer it to my Super Nintendo.
No, Super Nintendo.
Yeah. Okay. And now
yeah.
Let's see. We're reading Uncle Remus's fables, and so I need to transfer this game to my Atari baby. All right. This is getting real stupid.
Jesus.
It's got real stupid a long time ago. You know,
you guys
should have stopped me from okay, now yeah. I'm at Bible school, so it's time to port this game to my Genesis.
There you go.
Okay. Nobody goes to Bible school. What is this?
Also, 30s? there are no Genesis left. All right. So they have confirmed that they're going to make a new, like a sequel to Planescape Torment, but it probably will not be a Planescape.
Not actually a sequel,
right.
So this
is not made by any of the same people, nor is it in the same setting.
Yeah, it's talking about? It's Brian Fargo and Monty Coker both.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I have no idea what I'm talking about, guys. I told you should have shut me up.
It's just not going to be set in Planescape because they couldn't come to any sort of agreement with Wizards of the Coast and weren't really interested in it because they're more interested in using their own IP. Monty Cook has his own
setting. That thing was fucking crazy. I mean, I'm glad that, like, you know, for every one of those guys that gets $500,000 for, you know, $20,000 worth of work, like, there are a bunch of guys that don't manage to get $20,000 for $20,000 worth of work, and it makes me kind of sad, but I'm glad that, like, Monty Cook seemed like a good dude.
Yeah.
Did he get bought out of?
No, he did a $20,000 Kickstarter for that campaign setting, and it made like $500,000.
Oh, I didn't know that he did a Kickstarter for Numenera.
Yeah, that Numenor was a Numenar's
Numenera.
Hello, Numenera. It's he got a ton of money for that, and I don't know what I. Kickstarter always has this danger of, like, you make a bunch of money, and so you start making these crazy promises, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, the totally reasonable-seeming promises that I made to begin with were actually completely fucking crazy, so now I'm just kind of fucked. This is like, I wonder if there's going to be a documentary like that one that tracks the lottery winners and how they're all just fucking miserable and or dead, that tracks, like, ah, these are the people who are the recipients of really successful Kickstarters and the horrible ways in which reality came to roost for them. Yeah, I like Monty Cook. He did the Tomb of Horrors, right? Like that. He was.
I believe
didn't
so.
Didn't he do the original? Like, oh yeah, you can go left or right. Oh, if you go left, your whole party just dies. Cool. Good job, guys.
Yeah. So you know they're working on their other Kickstarter game right now, primarily. But they will. I think they're in pre-production on Torment, and as soon as. As soon as they get the time to do it, I think they're actually gonna jump in, which is cool. I might be
misattributing this, but to me, a Torment game is not gonna be a Torment game without Chris Avellone.
He's involved.
Are you guys sure about any of the things that you're saying?
I know definitely Monty Cook and
because I thought Chris Avellone just said sure, whatever.
I haven't. I haven't heard one way or the other about Avellone, but I know Fargo and Cook are in.
Okay.
I mean, basically,
these guys are all spread pretty fucking thin at this point. It's like, hey, we're gonna change the world in 8 different ways. Wasteland 2, okay. Project Eternity. I meant 2.
Well, 3 now.
Okay, it is. Let me backpedal a little bit. They are definitely talking to Chris about this. He has not signed on.
Right, sure. Okay, people talk to everybody about everything all the time. Somebody talked to me about a thing once that didn't result in a sweet game. It was just like, oh yeah, I got some coffee with no cream, please. I'm just saying.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's, you know, he might not be.
Kevin, are you getting frustrated
directly
with,
involved?
No.
Are you getting frustrated with me?
It's okay. IGF, the Independent Game Festival game finalists, Game Festival finalists. Yes, there's not a separate game in there.
Thing been announced. We didn't win.
No, we didn't get nominated.
No, of course not.
I mean, I don't feel bad about it. The competition was particularly.
No, and our game was a piece of shit.
No, that's not true.
It was interesting getting to see how much or how little judges actually look at games before they decide that they're not worth more consideration.
Yeah.
But that is neither here nor there. Anyway, the grand prize nominees are FTL, Kentucky Route Zero, Cart Life, Little Inferno, and Hotline Miami. So
everybody getting all excited about Cart Life now makes me wish that when I talked about Cart Life a few months ago that I had not gotten so frustrated with my inability to eat a hot dog that I just gave up.
It is interesting, the idea of taking a lemonade stand game to its, like, I don't know if logical conclusion is the right word, but
no,
like,
but it's like trying to make a game that is that kind of game, but that reflects a sort of like horrible, soul crushing, real world based struggle, as opposed to like, oh, I'm fucking around in my mom's yard and my mom bought all the sugar for this lemonade stand, right? And you know, I like. It was obvious that Cart Life had something to it when I played it, but my inability to figure out how to perform the basic actions of just, like, say, eating a hot dog bun filled with peanut butter. I think maybe the problem was that my idea was that I would eat a peanut butter dog and that the game maybe didn't support that recipe. Or it also could have been that when I was like, the guy was like, I'm hungry. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's go get some hot dog buns and peanut butter. That those are actually things for inventory. And I was supposed to go to a different place if I wanted to get food to eat. And it was like, the interface is very avant-garde and
minimalist,
pretty, right? And atmospheric, but I'm starving. I'm starving. What the fuck am I supposed to do with these hot dog buns and peanut butter? I'm so hungry. I'm too hungry to figure out what to do with this juicy burger. And I'm like, I don't know how to help you, bro. Like, I can make you smoke another cigarette, I guess.
Of the five, the only one that I know basically nothing about is Little Inferno. I don't know if any of you have played that at all.
No, I've never even heard of it until just now. Not even when I read the IGF finalists page. My eyes must have just skated right over that.
I saw some press about it maybe a month or two ago, and it honestly looked like the entire game was getting various objects out of boxes and then setting them on fire.
Cool.
Which, apparently the fire is really technically cool looking, but I don't know what, if any, gameplay.
Oh man,
is.
What would happen if the fire from Little Inferno encountered the water from Uncharted 3?
You'd get steam.
Would the entire city of San Francisco have a simultaneous game developer orgasm?
Yeah, and then at this point, really old news, Humble Bundle 7 finished its run, and there were about 400,000 bundles sold.
What would have been funny is if you had said, in really old news, and then reported the sales from, like, Humble Bundle 3.
And really
Kevin,
old
you're
news,
terrible
World
at writing
War
gags.
World War II is over.
All right.
Yeah, so that's all I got. For news.
News!
News.
So, this assignment, Waking Mars.
Waking Mars.
By
a game about plants.
Spider.
Tiger.
Tiger spider.
Style. Tiger style?
Tiger punch.
Bryce
punch?
Manor spider tigers.
Something like that. It looked like a t-shirt in a No More Heroes game.
Yeah. Okay. So we all finished this game.
We did. What the fuck? Yeah. It was because we had like a month between episodes, and so
yeah, that helped.
Did we all get every ending of it, or
I think so?
So I got the dome ending, and then the not dome ending, and then I think, dude, I don't know.
I got okay. Is the dome ending the one where you do the right side of the thing and the thing yeah. shoots out of the ground?
Okay, yep.
I got that one and the spaceship, except you stay in the spaceship.
Okay, those are the three that I'm.
I think I might have only gotten two endings.
Okay.
I don't know. I had like 103% or something when I beat it.
Yeah. 108.5.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What triggers the best ending?
Well, I mean, it depends. I don't know what you... It depends on what you mean by best, right? Like...
The one where you die. That's really all we can hope for.
The one where you go into suspended animation, or...
Dude, I don't... I guess I didn't see that one. I don't know.
That's just not leaving when the place is collapsing.
When the spaceship is launching.
Yeah. Just stay in the spaceship.
It's like the thing you stood on to make the dome ending happen, you instead stand on the thing on the other side of that room.
And yeah, it causes I did that.
A different thing.
Yeah.
And then you left. That spaceship,
and then stuff starts shaking, and you can either leave or not.
Basically. Yeah. In playing this game and in thinking about Idle Thumb's criticism of Far Cry 3, my response and annoyance at Idle Thumb's criticism of Far Cry 3, and then coming around to thinking about like the systems of a game in the sense of, do these systems need to be here in order to express what the game is trying to express? And this game felt to me like a winner in that particular contest, with a couple of exceptions.
What was the criticism of Far Cry 3 that you
I don't really want to get into it, but like in general, just it being a big amalgamation of gameplay systems that don't really support the thesis of the game, which is arguable whether Far Cry 3 has a thesis, whether okay. there was anyone to provide that thesis, right?
Right.
But I guess the general criticism is like, what were they trying to do with this, and how does any of the stuff that they did in the game support what they were trying to do with this? And I can see asking that question about that game. I can see asking that question about almost every game, but with Waking Mars, at least, it seems like they decided, all right, this is a game about exploration and plants, so everything that happens is going to be about exploration and plants. And the one thing that bugged me a little bit is that I did not see any reason for there to be you having hit points and taking damage and healing from those other plants system. Other than, well, it's a video game, so you have to have hit points.
Yeah.
Right? Because nothing happened if you got killed.
It restarted the level.
You lost some progress.
Did it really?
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
It saves whenever you enter a level, and if you die, then it takes you back to when you first entered.
So well, that's confusing as well as trivial, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
So I enjoyed messing... Like, this game felt to me like a thing where it's like the mechanics support the atmosphere supports the mechanics... The atmosphere and the mechanics support the gameplay. The gameplay supports me having a boner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was a little disappointed in that it set itself up like your first few rooms and I guess all the stuff before the base initially collapses, or introducing you to these plants, and you can see that, okay, I'm going to run into some more of some different kinds of plants in the future, and here's different things I can do with these plants by changing the composition of the soil, and here's how these different plants interact. And it looks like that's the tutorial phase that's going to set up some definite puzzles later on where right. you have to figure out the specific plants you need to plant in the specific places and the specific ways to clear a level. Right. And that never happens. Instead, yep. you can basically yeah. plant anything you want, anywhere you want, and 5-star a level.
Well, that's not true.
That's oversimplifying, but
I mean
it's the very was not that, rigorous.
Except in maybe one or two situations, every level had the exact same solution.
Yeah. Which was well, just what was that plant the basic plants and then fertilize them?
So there was that, but there was the you get a bunch of those phyta, those like independently moving stuff, and the first Goa plants, and you just get them in such a situation where the Goa plants are continually spitting out seeds, and it will churn out an infinite number of those 5 biomass phyta. You just have to sit there and wait.
That's a way to do it.
A solution.
But it's not
fast or active, right?
No. So, and that's one of the reasons that I didn't like it. Like I was like, this is the easiest way I can just do this. To walk away from the game for 10 minutes and come back, and the level is 5.
But it is also the most bullshit way. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's kind of on you.
But I mean, even the
is it.
Even the less bullshit ways of solving the level of just always planting that basic first healing plant and fertilizing it, and you almost never have to think about it any further than that.
Yeah. I mean, because collecting fertilizer was a pain in the ass a lot of the time. And
well,
like
until you open the garden or whatever where you can
that
just
one
go.
With the round rooms. Yeah.
Inventory limits were a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, I was surprised the first time I went to a new room and still had my inventory. I was like, oh.
Oh, because you'd always been spending everything in...
Well, no, I expected that is how they would enforce...
Puzzles.
The
stuff.
Puzzles, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what you want the game to be, right? Like, I think you guys can look at this and think, oh, this should be a really difficult puzzle game. When in fact, this is kind of a poking around and planting plants game.
Yeah.
But there wasn't, like, it didn't feel like there was much reward for poking around. Like, there were, so this was, okay, the reason that I went back and played Trine 2 after having played this to completion was, you know, I was like, you know, this reminds me a lot of Trine 2. There's a lot of, like, foreground and background art similarities in my mind. It's like a pseudo platformer. But not really. It's got sort of like systematic interactions with the environment. And so I went back and it like there were situations in this game where seeds would fall behind the foreground art. And I was like, why is this plant not producing any seeds? But it was because they had already produced seeds and they had rolled somewhere I couldn't see them. Huh. And I was like, I'm kind of annoyed at games that have situations where the artwork impinges on my ability to just play and enjoy the game.
Well, but I think that's a result of it being a systems-driven game rather than a like particular authored experience-driven game, right? I mean, like,
but the systems weren't interesting enough for me to like really care, right? Like there were.
Yeah, but this was like an iPhone game. I mean, how interesting do they need to be? Right? It took like a couple hours and it was. The story was neat and the characters were neat and it had.
I really liked
it. It had an interesting atmosphere and like.
The writing was terrible.
No, it wasn't.
Oh my God. It was terrible.
Okay, I didn't like the. I didn't
water
like
plant.
The...
Water plant. I mean, come on.
I didn't like the voice acting of the girl, really, because
I felt like the girl
was written in a way that you can't actually say that shit out loud without sounding stupid.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that was I think part of it, right? Like,
but,
why did
but,
they?
But
voice
if it was
it?
Just well, because they it was an iPhone game that they then remade for Steam, right? So they voiced it as part of making it a bigger thing. Like, I don't know. I thought the robot was funny.
I thought the robot was cool. I really liked that the main character was an astronaut and scientist who was of an age that would be appropriate to that character instead of being like a handsome 20-year-old buff dude.
Yeah, and he behaved like a scientist would in that situation, which is not like getting overwhelmed by the majesty and not, you know, getting excited about stuff more
than
just like that sort of
cautious.
Did you ever
bother going to the places where they were like, go to this place to talk to me?
Yeah.
And like do that stuff like
a couple of times.
That was such inane, boring dialogue. I was like, why are you encouraging me so strongly to do this?
Well, because I think that you're supposed to do that if you're stuck. But we never did that at a time when we were stuck.
Huh.
Right. I mean, I didn't do it a lot. I did it a couple times. I'm like, oh, okay, so there's just more shit that I don't really care about. But like, I don't know. I mean, I am willing to forgive it not being a particularly, like, you see what it could be, and you're mad that it's not that.
I mean, I look at Space Kim, right, which actually had, I thought, pretty compelling writing and a really interesting story, and, like, was this incredibly deep systems-driven game with interesting puzzle constraints, and I'm like, okay, that's a game that I can really get behind, whereas this was a much shallower kind of, I don't know, it didn't in my mind deliver on any axis that was really compelling. I didn't think the art was all that great.
See, whereas I actually played all the way through Waking Mars, where I played 15 minutes of Space Cam and I was like, oh, this is some nerd bullshit.
fair enough. You know, and that, maybe that's the thing, right? Maybe I was trying to get into this.
Right. This is our Don't Look Back Disparity. Like, Space Cam is 100 times as hard as a video game that I'm going to beat.
Interesting.
I mean, yeah, I don't. I understand your objections, but I think that you're objecting to something from the perspective of aspirations that the people making this game didn't have.
Okay.
Right? I mean, you're an idealist, and you want this thing to be perfect for you.
I hate when people use, like, really bullshit science terms to try to make something sound technical.
Do you think that happened here?
Yeah, there were a couple places where I was like, oh, God, this is just nonsense. These are nonsense sentences that you are saying.
I mean, not everybody is a scientist, Kevin, so they're not all gonna recognize.
Not all of us is a rocket surgeon.
The nomenclatures that you are familiar with.
I don't know. And then I was also pretty annoyed at their like handling of the logical states. There were a bunch of times where, because I was reading pretty much everything that I was given a chance to read and like interacting with.
Well, you were reading everything on the screen and also reading some Nabokov in your other hand.
but they would regularly reference stuff that I had never seen or encountered, and they weren't whatever logic they had assumed either a different path through their
stuff. There were definitely times where a quest tracker thing would be like, go back to the X, and I'm like, what the fuck is an X?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so that is, you in the course of our job, we run into shit
so here's the thing, like, I felt like the problem was that they let you do this sort of branching, sort of quasi-exploration thing, but there wasn't really that much point to that. Like, they could have just had a linear progression through that felt like it was branching, I think. And,
yeah,
they could have avoided all of these logical issues.
That's right? Probably fair, but, I mean, in order to do that, there would have had to have been some roadblocking that felt really artificial, I think.
That's true. I guess you can't win on every axis because it's never going to be completely satisfying to
Kevin's
somebody.
Kevin's auto-tune.
Yeah, you turned into a crazy Skype robot there for a minute.
That's awesome. What's cool is that we're in the same room.
Oh man, what's cool is that we're in the same room, but you're at the bottom of this sweet well in the corner of the room.
Sweet robot well.
Yeah. Nobody else can hear this. You know, yeah. I say what you will about what it delivered and what it failed to deliver, at least it prompted this discussion, right?
Sure.
I picked this game because I just bought it on Steam because I saw it and I was like, oh sure, this is a thing. I heard Jake Rodkin say that this game was cool, so I'm gonna buy it. Because I heard him say something about a sandwich once, and I was like, that sounds like a pretty good sandwich, and then it was pretty good. And then I played it and I was like, oh huh, this actually seems like it's really good. I'm gonna suggest this as a video games hot dog assignment. And then I played it for another couple hours and I was like, oh man, I think we should postpone this episode so that we can all beat this game. And not little did I know that postponing that one episode would mean that it was postponed for 9 years while we
Kevin
cryosleep. Kevin read Nabokov in a cryo cave. Man, by the time you woke up, Lolita was like 90. All right, so the next assignment was Kevin's idea. So Kevin, yeah. Say the name of it.
Thomas Was Alone.
This is a indie game about the tank engine.
Yeah.
It runs on Windows and Mac OS. It's available on Steam and probably other places.
It looks like there are some rectangles in it.
It's mostly about rectangles, yeah.
Good. All right, so this show has been soups ass long, and we should put a stop to it. Kevin,
okay.
If somebody wanted to send in a listener's mail for our never actually occurring listener's mail segment, how would they do that?
Well, I would recommend that they tweet at us using our Twitter name @VGHotDog. They could email us at VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or they could come and join our forums, which you can find a link to from videogameshotdog.com. Let me say that again. Videogameshotdog.com.
Also, gideovameshotdog.hotdognet.com would work. However you want to spell
We should totally register Gideovames.
Tim Mooney had written into the, just a couple things here from the Twitter.
Yeah.
The Gravedigger says, thanks for the recommendation on Lords of Waterdeep. Picked up a copy on your advice. Great game. Really enjoyed it. I cannot stress enough how fucking balls-ass tits Lords of Waterdeep is.
I do want to come back to Arizona so I can play more Lords of Waterdeep.
Fuck yes.
That game is great.
You do. Tim Mooney writes, my roomie and I just today finished a couple weeks of listening to all the shows. Love it. Also just started Creeper World. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good sentiment for having just started Creeper World.
So that's a game that was somewhere in between Waking Mars and Space Camp in terms of both story and systems.
Oh man, don't even fucking start. No. The writing in Creeper World is the most abysmal fucking horseshit that I have ever seen.
I didn't say
story. 50 or 60 characters of ASCII. Like, I could understand you having some niggling objections to the scientific terminology that Dr. Chang or whatever uses in Waking Mars.
I thought the dialogue was really bad in Waking Mars. I really didn't like it.
Okay.
But I honestly don't remember. I remember Creeper World not being so great, but you might be right. It might be really terrible.
I mean, it was like at least the people who wrote Waking Mars speak English.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, I'm not prejudiced against non-English speakers the way that I am against non-whites, but I'm saying if you're going to release a game in English, you ought to at least get like a localization hobo, if not a localization team, just to do like a once over. Like, hey, wait a minute, I'm fucking soaked in my own urine, and I recognize that this sentence is fucking ridiculous. Maybe you want to rewrite this. All right, gonna go offer localization hobo services to any game companies that need it, any independent studios. We will do it for one bottle of Ripple. All right, guys, I've had a good time doing an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you, and I hope that our listeners have had a good time doing whatever else they were doing while they listened to this episode, and that we were able to briefly distract them from obsessing about their own mortality.
I didn't even get a chance to thank any of our awesome Kickstarter backers. Who's
we got to do that? It doesn't work when you're remote. We have to get in the groove of doing that, and we have to do it all while we are in the same room and looking at each other and smiling.
I don't know. I like MC Frontalot's mom. She's taunting me from this slip of paper.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She actually she was one of our major backers. She's great.
She is. She's a classy lady. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Later.
Have a great week, everybody.
Gun.